You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 26th. Is that right? Is it that late in the season? I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Friday night is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm inside and dry.
And you're yes, and that's good. It's always good on a wet day outside. And you're getting ready to go on a trip, and that's why we're recording on a Friday.
Correct. Ostensibly, we're supposed to be leaving on Saturday, but we've got a typhoon barreling towards Narita Airport, so that might not actually happen.
Well, weather permitting, you go and get some rest.
But,
and
but you know, I've been in Japan more than 38 years now, and I've never missed a flight because of the weather.
Uh-oh, you know what they say in baseball? You're due.
I'm due. Maybe I just jinxed it. Maybe if I had said that a typhoon, and it was perfectly clear, a typhoon would have appeared out of nowhere. You know, if you follow the logic of baseball jinxers.
Logic, he jokes. You don't bring any of that jinx stuff around me. You know I don't believe in that. So you can talk about it all you want. I don't believe you can impact the weather either. But good luck. I hope you guys can leave tomorrow. And
We haven't been overseas since the pandemic, so it'll be, and it's a non-baseball thing. We haven't been on a non-baseball vacation for a long time, so.
All right, well, have fun. Well, on this week's show, we've got our second chat this season with Cebu Lions outfielder Brian O'Grady. We're going to do a deep dive into some data on pitch counts, and we're going to talk about the league races, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
So I reached out to Brian O'Grady again recently, and he is just such a great guy. And he's really very easy to root for. And at the same time, you can appreciate him. We had him on the April 11th show seven this year. If you follow along in the volume section of our programming, I guess a lot has gone down for him since then. A lot has gone down for the team since then. You know, the Lions, they spent a huge chunk of the season in first place or at least up in the top three, and they've dropped out of the top three at the moment. And boy, we got people celebrating outside, and they're just in the midst of just struggles, I would say, because they had a 7-game losing streak recently. They broke that, but now you've got the schedule that has, you know, we've got makeup dates and long gaps between games that you have to endure and just practice. And then I guess you put a lot of focus on that next game. So everybody might come out tight because you're just trying to do so much in that next game. But anyway, we got to sit down on Wednesday and chat. Wednesday was a day off for him and the team. And so we spoke about the season. We spoke about the playoff chase and more. So let's take a listen. All right, joining us this week, and it's a pleasure to have him on for a second time this season, is Brian O'Grady of the Cebu Lions. Thank you, buddy. Good to see you, and thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, good to be back, John. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, so we spoke a while back, and now you've had a really time to have a really strong impression of MPB and what it's like being over here. So what's the first thing you're going to tell people back home about Japanese baseball when you get asked?
Oh, man. I would say that the competition level is legit for sure. The pitching, especially in the Pacific League, man, is no joke. There's a lot of really good pitchers. They're tough at bats for sure. So that would probably be the first thing. I don't think people understand quite the level of competition that it is. But just in general, man, it's been a long year. It's been a lot of ups, a lot of downs, you know, and it's been tough, but you know, we're right there in the thick of things for the playoffs, and hopefully we can put some good games together these last couple and get into the playoffs now.
Yeah. Hey, I got news for you. It's tough every year. It's tough every year. But I know you know that, and it's never easy. It's never easy. And I'm not sure fans and people appreciate how much work goes into it, but I know it takes a lot of work. So appreciate you watching you out there in center field. How is center field, man, for you?
I love – center's the best, but, you know, I had earlier this season, I messed up my quad pretty good, so I couldn't honestly run 100% for about the first 3 months of the season, right around there. Uh-huh. So my defense definitely took a hit in the outfield because I just couldn't really move like I was used to, which was frustrating. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, left field was home for sure. But – started moving around a little bit there, depending on who else is out there. I do love center field. It's my favorite. I think you see the ball the best, you know, off the bat. So I enjoy it. It's been fun being back there. But you know, I've played everywhere in the outfield, so I'm used to all the spots, and wherever they want me to play, I'll be out there playing as hard as I can.
All right. Well, I know that. That's something I tell people all the time. I say, you don't know. You're making judgments, but you don't know who fouled a ball off of that leg. You don't know who's limping around out there. The manager knows, and that's why he's making decisions that he's making. So just watch and enjoy. But you don't know. So it's interesting to hear you had a quad that you were dealing with. I tell you, don't get old, man, because these hamstrings, they don't last.
Yeah, man.
All right. So I feel like the teams in the Pacific League are really close in talent. And I think that's evident with a team like the last place Fighters being a really tough W every night. But your team has struggled in September. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And as much as you can tell us, to what do you attribute the recent difficulty?
You know, it's season's obviously very long, and everyone says that, and people understand that. And we were very good for a long time there. Like you said, the other teams in this division are very good too. The pitching, like I said in particular, is very good, and we just kind of stopped hitting as a unit, as a team, I would say, all at the right same time. You know, and that makes it tough. I think our pitching has been phenomenal all year, and they've kept us in games recently too, but we just couldn't put together that rally or got guys on base and couldn't get that big hit to kind of put us over the top there. You know, personally, I feel like we were rolling pretty good, and I was swinging it pretty good, and I've been struggling lately, so that's part of it. And I think, you know, Yamakawa has been just unbelievable all season. And he hit a little rough patch here too. So that's hurt because he's just done so much for us that it was kind of like we were used to it. So when he struggles that little bit, we were trying to find somewhere else to get that. And it just hasn't happened. So we won last night. He had a couple hits. Hopefully, we that gets us rolling. But I think if I had to point to something, that our bats just started to go cold a little bit altogether at once.
You know, I think I'd like to call it separation September, and I don't think it's pressure and everything, but the season is winding down, and you know, you guys start to grind down a little bit. And what is it like? I guess there's a lot of stress, obviously, going through and knowing that you have to win these games. But what's it like going through a playoff battle in September, especially when the season gets a little choppy? I've always referenced this. September is there's a lot of makeup dates and all the other things that go around. So
in the beginning, it was a lot of fun. I mean, when we were in first place and SoftBank came to us, I mean, it was about a month ago now. And they were a game or whatever behind us, and I think we swept them, or we beat them twice. I can't remember. And that was a lot of fun. The atmosphere, just how we were playing good baseball. I hit a big homer. Like, everything was just – it was fun, and it was going our way, and we were playing really well. And, you know, lately it hasn't been as fun. We had that rough stretch, like you said, and I guess you talk about the pressure when things start going not right for a few games, then you start to feel it a little bit more and everybody's trying to do more at the plate, whatever it is. And that can definitely build. So hopefully we put a stop to that yesterday, but you can't beat it. I mean, it's great to play in meaningful games like this. You know, it's way better than being 15 games back or whatever, and you're just finishing out the season. You just got to keep playing. You know, each game is one game at a time. Each game is its own game. And if you're just focusing on that, everything else should take care of itself. But, you know, it's definitely fun. You know, the fans are passionate about it and everybody wants to win. So it just makes it makes the games more intense.
Yeah, you talk about the intensity. And I think, I guess 20 years ago, games between a third place team and a fourth place team in September would have been just kind of playing out the string situation and not had a lot of intensity and guys playing for individual achievements and awards and all that stuff. But now you've got, you know, head to head battles with teams that you're trying to leapfrog or keep off of you and keep in front of. And there's no days off. It just seems like how do you classify this whole situation when you're playing, even when you're playing the Fighters, it's like high stress.
Absolutely. I don't know the numbers, but I feel like we've struggled with them. It feels like we've struggled with them this year to me. So yeah, there's no like games off or automatic wins or anything like that. There's a lot of good players. So it changes quick when you're only playing five other teams. You lose a couple games in a row and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, that just happened to us. We, you know, we hit the rough patch and lost to SoftBank and then kind of dropped a little bit. And all of a sudden, you know, Eagles come in and they're a few games behind us and then they beat us a few times and we're looking up at them. So it's just, it can change so fast. So it really does. Each game is so important and it makes it more fun as a player, but it's just, man, it's craziness. It's everything's just so close and there's so few teams that it's not something I'm used to. And it's definitely crazy.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I like watching games. So and I'm so glad I don't have to throw it and I'm so glad I don't have to hit it. And I just sit back and watch the fun, and it is fun. So just know that everybody's out there. We're all watching these games because they're so important. So no games, no bad deed, no good deed goes unnoticed. We're cheering and we're hurting with the rest of the players that as you guys experience it. So now your season, I mean, you know, we've got a little bit more than a couple weeks, I guess, if you play out those last games in October. So about a couple weeks more to go in the season. How have you grown as a baseball player during this season in NPB?
Honestly, it's you know, it's been a tough season for me looking at everything now. I think the difference in style has opened up my eyes, which is funny because I didn't know baseball could be so different, but it really is here. The difference in pitching styles and how I'm pitched and things like that. But I feel like I probably see the ball better and I have more of an idea about splitters and just different things the pitchers do than I did before. But at the same time, my swing and mechanically I feel has gotten just progressively worse over the entire season to where it's just really not in a good spot or a spot where I want it to be. And it's not as efficient or as direct as it was. So that's been a major problem for me and something I've been trying to correct. And it's just, you know, in the heat of the season, it just hasn't really clicked. So it's made, even though I've seen the ball better, I feel like I have to make decisions earlier and earlier because my swing is just not as efficient. So I'm still chasing some pitches and I'm missing some pitches I should hit. And so it's been frustrating in that aspect. And but, you know, you just go out there and compete and try to do the best you can. And I definitely do see some things that I've improved on, but overall, definitely been frustrating for me.
Yeah, well, that's how you grow. So that's how you learn and you adjust and all those things. And
absolutely,
I've talked to players before. If it's too easy for you, then you need to go to the next level. So
yeah, man, I've been lucky in it. Well, not lucky. We talked about that. Not lucky, but in the sense, I've had a lot of success over the last 5 or 6 years, whatever it's been. So I'm not saying I was due. I don't think you're ever due for something, but I've had my little down year in terms of that. And, after the season is over and hopefully we win the championship and I have some big hits and all that along the way, I got some stuff to go back and work on and hammer out so I can be ready to go for the next year. And it's like you say, this game will humble you for sure. When you think you got it figured out, you definitely don't. So that's been my experience right now. And it is what it is, man. You just got to keep going.
Well, one of my phrases, especially when I was a player playing basketball, losing is learning.
Yep.
And that's absolutely the way it goes. So now I know you guys have the phenom Noki Sasaki in the Pacific League, but I just wanted to ask you about the phenom in the Central League. And I'm sure you know the numbers, but I'm not sure how much you get to see him. But Munetaka Murakami of the Yakult Swallows is just this mashing monster from another planet, and he's obviously starting to draw some attention from major league teams and all that. Not seriously, because he's still young and isn't really in line to be posted yet. But I'm thinking if this team, wins again and wins the Japan Series again, that the team will say, well, look, we've got as much, gotten as much as we're going to get out of you. You're free to go. So that might happen sooner than later. But anyway, I appreciate what Shohei Ohtani does playing both ways, but how much of Murakami have you seen, and what do you know about him? What have you seen from him this season?
I see most of the highlights on Twitter for sure. So I know what he's done. I know what he's doing. I remember going back to the last preseason games we were playing them, and I had no idea who he was or how his season was last year or anything like that. But when he was hitting, I'm like, I like this guy's swing. He can swing it, and here we, figure out who he is and the season he's had so far this year. It's insane. There's no other way to say it. Those numbers are out of this world. I see the homers. I mean, he's hitting them to no doubters to every part of the field on different pitches. He's got a great swing. He's a big dude. But I love the efficiency of the swing, and it really is a very, very good swing. So you don't hit that way without the discipline, the eyes, the timing, everything. He's been on an absolute tear all season, and it's cool to watch. I think we played them in interleague, and I think he had one homer, maybe two. I remember one, and it was at a big spot if they basically won him the game. And I remember being out there like, why are we pitching? Why are we even pitching this to this guy? But I would definitely think he has an MLB future if that's what he wants to do. And that'll be really cool to see how he adjusts to that too.
All right, Brian, we always like talking to you. Not sure what your situation is for contract-wise, but we hope you're coming back next season. And we hope we get to talk to you again in the playoffs here. So good luck as you go down the stretch. Stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So I guess one little comment, when Brian was saying, yeah, I see all the highlights. And then I thought, oh, he watches highlights on TV or YouTube. And then he said, I see all the highlights on Twitter. And I'm thinking, whoa, I'm old. I am old. I never heard people talk about seeing the highlights on Twitter. But anyway, what stood out for you?
Well, a couple of things. He was on the spectrum. We have a spectrum of how different Japanese baseball is from it's baseball. It can't be that different because it's baseball, right? So that's one end.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one is, wow, was, and Brian was at the other extreme. I never knew baseball could be this different.
Mm.
And that was kind of interesting to me. Yeah, Brian's unique. And I don't know if he's unique, but he's sort of like at the far end of a couple of these spectrums. I mean, he's properly, I thought he was properly optimistic about, you know, the things to work on next year, and that was really good. But coming out and saying, typically when players are struggling, they tend to be optimistic. I'm through it. I'm working on it. I'm getting there. He was like, oh man, it's like going downhill. You know, it's going to hell in a handbasket, my swing. And that was refreshing. You know, you just don't hear I got whiplash when I heard that. I'm going like, man, get the aspirin, because I'm going, whoa, where did that come from? And he's just so honest about things that most players would put a little, you know, good natured spin, you know, a little fan friendly sort of, you know, we're all doing our best. And of course, the obvious one was the one we talked about last year when we talked, last week, although it was just 5 days ago. In last week's show, we talked about the Lions' inability to score. And, you know, he said, you know, that's it. We just stopped scoring. Everybody stopped hitting. And I think that was, that jibed with what we saw. So those Definitely. Are the things that kind of stuck out. I was just taken back by how blunt he was, which is great because, you know, you're not hiding nothing from nobody.
Sure. Yeah. So. No, you're not. So that makes sense.
Yep.
I used to, when I played basketball, and I always reference my basketball days. I apologize, really? Guys, but really, he says, I haven't done it in a while, actually. I don't think.
Okay.
But anyway,
okay.
I had a coach who said, you know, I don't want my team to be that close sometimes. I want them to be in cliques. I want guys to be doing different things. Because when one guy goes into a slump, they all go into a slump. But if they're in cliques and they're separated, and we've got two over here and two over there and two doing different things over there, then when the one group is in a slump, you've got the other group that says, okay, we can take over and step up at least and do something. And I think that happens in baseball sometimes, that they like to say hitting is contagious, but they never say slumping is contagious, but it is. It's just as contagious as hitting, I should say, because if you believe in that thing, which I kind of believe that when things are going well for a few guys, that, you know, it can give confidence to other guys, and confidence is part of the game there. But
it is, and it takes some of the pressure, you know.
Sure.
And I think that's it. If nobody's hitting, it's like,
right?
Oh man, I've got to do more than I can do, essentially. You know,
I've got to do it. Yeah, I've got to get it done. Not more,
I got to swing at this first
more.
Pitch because it's going to be the best pitch, even if it's not. You know, I got to do more than I've got to step outside of what I'm best at, essentially.
Well, see, I disagree with that. I just think that you feel that you have to do it. You have to make something happen. You don't necessarily have to hit a home run.
No,
but you are definitely feeling pressure to produce something, to get on base, whether it's a walk, a hit, whatever it is. You know, that doing too much is an easy exit for a lot of people when they're trying to. And I'm not saying that you're saying that, but I'm saying announcers like to do that. People in the media, we like to do that a lot of times and give an excuse. But I don't think that's always the case. I just think
not always.
Just more pressure to produce, instead of, you know, it's more like, you know, it's, you always feel like it's the last out of the game. I've got to get it done here or we're dead, you know, that kind of feeling. But I just wanted to point out the overall tone. And I think you could hear how much it pains Brian that the team hasn't been able to maintain that winning baseball it was playing in the first half of the season. And you hear Brian talking about his swing being all over the place and still trying to find a groove and dealing with injuries and trying to make adjustments throughout the season. And I don't know. I don't think he has had that bad a season. I mean, the batting average might be low, but if he were that awful, the team really wouldn't be playing him, and I don't really think they'd be putting him in center field at times. So I think this team has confidence in him still, and we saw Brandon Laird in his first season really not hit that well at all for average, but he did have power numbers, and he drove in runs. So he's got 16 home runs. He's got 24 doubles, 52 RBIs. Now, he could have more RBIs. That's true, but I don't think it's that bad. I don't think, you know, we're talking about a guy who has struggled that badly. But when you hear him talking about it and understanding that when we spoke to him the first time, he said, you know, there were some issues with his swing that he had identified and that he was trying to work the kinks out at that time. And so to hear, you know, that was back in April, to come all the way full circle or almost full circle here in September of a season, and to hear him talk about how his swing is not where he wants it to be, not efficient. And the words that he used, I think the language that he used was, for me, that just left an impression on there. So these players, they go through so much with the expectations, their own, you know, the fans, the observers, we all have expectations on them for them. And we see them produce a couple times here and there, and then those become the expectations. And then when they don't live up to that, they feel awful. The team wants more. The fans are booing or angry or want the guy's head or whatever. And I just, you know, we got to slow down. I say that as an observer, but I say it as a fan too. But you know, I was looking at his numbers, and I looked at the Dragons' numbers, and I thought, you know, I'm no GM or anything, but I would say the Dragons could have used, you know, those numbers in left field this whole season. The 16 home runs, the 24 doubles, the 50. I bet he would have more RBIs, because the Dragons are really good at getting guys on base and leaving them there. So, you know, I know that he's not under contract, and I'm no GM or anything. I'm not even a scout, but I certainly wouldn't turn that down if I were the Dragons.
If I were the Dragons, I'd love to have him in left field. I think, wow, what an outfield.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about Dion Viciedo. I guess if you look at his overall numbers, they're not
He's played well the last month, but yeah, to sort of rescue what it was a really sad season.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still really frustrated with him, even though he's hitting close to 300 overall, and he's got 12 home runs, and Brian had 16. And I went through and I tried to figure out who in left field would be the equivalent of a left fielder for the Dragons. And there's no one. There's no one. They have had so many guys go through there at left field. But none of them, I don't think they wouldn't even add up to 10 home runs. I don't think all the guys that they've had out there. I know Ariel Martinez has about 8 home runs, but I don't think some of them have come when he has played at first base. And I think at least one of them came in interleague play when he was DHing. So I don't know if that counts, but all I can say is the left, you know, they don't have any left-handed power. I think I don't know if you could guess offhand who is their left-handed batter with the most home runs on the team, on the Dragons. You would have no clue, right? And you're going to be shocked when I tell you who it is. It's the number is 3. And it's Yota Kyoda, who hasn't played since he was banished. His complete banishment from the top team. So, you know, left-handed, they don't have any left-handed power either. So, you know, I don't know. The Lions are not interested. And I obviously, like I said, cannot play GM or anything like that, but I can't. If I were the Dragons, I wouldn't let him leave Japan without at least talking to him and trying to offer him a contract and seeing what's out there in terms of his interest. But anyway, it hasn't been that bad a season. And again, we talked about the fact that if the Lions don't finish in the top three, forget about first place, all right? I think that that ship has sailed. They don't finish in the top three. The actual MVP, Hotaka Yamakawa, is not going to win that honor. He's probably not going to win it anyway now. In fact, I tweeted out earlier how Yuki Yanagita hit a home run tonight that looked like it was going to make him the MVP. But since then, the Marines have stormed back and scored 4 runs. So they are leading this game as we record here in the 10th inning of that game. So anyway, like I said, the whole overall tone, it has been a struggle, and I think you can hear it in the way Brian delivers the messages. And he was real. I mean, he was jovial, and we spoke, and he seemed happy. But I think when you really look at the language that he was using and his comments, that it has been a struggle this season. And while the overall numbers might say that, I just don't think it has been that bad comparatively.
Yeah. Well, I think, when you talk about the MVP thing, I think really the front runner now is going to be Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Because where it depends. It really depends on how close they finish to first, whether they win or not. But I think they could finish right. If they finish right up close with the Hawks, then he could be the back-to-back Pacific League MVP.
No, I disagree with you. I think the front runner is Yanagita, and it's only because in the Japanese media's mind, I don't think personally I don't feel this way. Yamamoto, I guess it's okay. I just feel like if they're not going to vote for Yamakawa, then they're going to have to find some other guy. But for me, it's Yamakawa. But
yeah, no, I agree with you.
Okay, for the media, though, I think Yanagita hit, home run number 22 tonight. He has been fairly healthy the entire second half of the season. And he's usually struggling with injuries. So he's out there, he's hitting home runs, he's productive, and he's Yanagita. He hit one of those home runs tonight where I actually saw the swing. I think he thought he didn't get enough of it or might have hit under it or something because of his reaction. And then it goes out to center, and the team is in the lead, and they were down a run, and it was a two-run shot, so it put him in the lead. It was the perfect, MVP moment for him. They just blew it in the ninth inning, and then consequently in the 10th inning as well, giving up runs. But I don't know. It's not Senga. It's not Kodai Senga for sure. He has been strong as well as the ace, and I know they like to default to, the next best pitcher on the team or the top pitcher on the team or somebody who's won 10 games or something like that. But there just isn't some player out there for the Hawks who has really been a standout MVP kind of guy. So, yeah, Yanagita, for me, is the guy I think the Japanese media are going to point to as the person they're going to shove out in front of everyone and say, look, this is the MVP.
Well, I agree with you in that respect because he did come on strong in the second half. He had kind of, I remember maybe at the All-Star break, he probably had about 9 home runs.
Yeah, it's that many. Mm-hmm.
And he has been on a bit of a tear, and not just home runs, but doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's no longer a center fielder, he plays it occasionally, but he's pretty much a right fielder now. So, but he could certainly do it. I think if the Buffaloes do win it, I think it's going to be hard to that Yamamoto doesn't.
Yeah, again, Yoshida has also had a really nice season and has been healthy.
Well, he's been healthy the second half.
The second half, yeah. Since he came back, he hasn't even had these nagging injuries. And I shouldn't say that. We haven't heard about the nagging injuries. And he has been very much at the forefront of their offense and been very productive for them. But, yeah, I could see them making it Yamamoto. He has been the man all season long, and except for a couple of games here and there, he's basically been the guy. So
My disappointment is that we won't be able to record the podcast. There's a great matchup tomorrow, which is Masahiro Tanaka and Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and they were both outstanding in their last start, which means it's probably time for Tanaka to get his head beat in again.
Yes,
because that's the way his season's gone.
That's true.
I mean, his overall numbers are just really horrid. I mean, they're pretty awful. His slider is still a good pitch, but by and large, most of his stuff is not playing.
Yeah, so, I heard on a podcast someone saying the Yankees should try to go out and get Tanaka back for the stretch run in the postseason. I'm like, dude, are you paying any kind of attention? And do you have any spare change that you can?
I think that was a Red Sox fan who said that.
probably so.
We want to hit home runs off him too.
Yeah. Well, again, it has been, I tell you this, I'm looking at SoftBank and they look really strong and they're on the verge of winning, even though they lost this game tonight in come from ahead fashion. It was only one run and Moianello got Moianello gave up a home run to Shogo Nakamura in the ninth inning. And there's no shame in that. That's a really good player. But I'm looking at Hiroshi Fujimoto, the manager of SoftBank, and I'm thinking we had, you know, the new managers this year. We had Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the big boss up in Hokkaido with the Fighters, and we had Kazuyoshi Tatsunami of the Dragons. And of the three, obviously, the results are the best for Fujimoto, but I really think he has actually done a really good job as well as having a lot of talent. Because they have had to manage through sliding a lot of pitchers in and out, resting pitchers and position players. And he has had to manage the whole injury situation and bringing new guys in and resting some of his veterans and getting guys like Yanagita to produce but not overwork him, keep him fresh. So I really think the whole – and I'm not saying it's all him. It's probably the structure within the organization and – he probably had the most pressure to deal with, but the most support as well, because I think the rest of the, it just seems like from a distance that whole organization is on the same page. And also he's got guys like, I called him on Twitter, Mr. Hit-tober, because it seems like Alfredo D'Espagna, every, the second half of seasons, especially the months of September, October, and November, the months that end in BER, he really hits, not necessarily goes off, but he comes up with clutch hits constantly and is really, I can't call him Mr. September or Mr. October or Mr. November. He's Mr. Hit-tober. And managing all these guys and getting them in, even when D'Espagna was out injured, they worked him back in slowly. They didn't throw him right back into the fray. And then Yudispil Gracial, when he obviously is injured again, but they've just rolled with all the punches, and here they are on the verge of getting past the Buffaloes and winning the Pacific League title again after finishing outside the playoffs last year. So it's pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, no, I think so. He's not. I dislike his love for small ball stuff, but I figured that was sort of a passing thing. That was in the preseason. I watched him bunting all this time. I'm going, are you really doing this stuff with this team? And it's like, yeah, it's like, I figured he was just trying to prove that he could manage in Japan and not get the former players to say that he can't manage because he doesn't know when to call for the automatic first inning bunt. But it seems to be something he likes. And the funny thing about it is he was kind of a, I'm trying to think of a similar player to him now. He was an on-base percentage with medium-range power, not a particularly good defender.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little bit like, he was like Toshiro, in fact, he looked like Toshiro Miyazaki, so that's a good comp. He was like Toshiro Miyazaki without the batting average.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of a 290 career hitter, you know, he's like a 260 career hitter, but he's got, you know, hits 15 home run, 10, 15 home runs and limited playing time. I mean, he probably was only getting 300, 400 at bats a year. But with, plenty of walks and that was his thing. And he wasn't the sort of typical middle infielder, small ball guy that Japan, that the Pro Yakuin News guys drool about.
Mm. I was going to go Yusuke Oyama of the Tigers.
Yeah.
No, as a comp.
Oyama's got much more power.
Yeah, but he might have the power, but it doesn't, it's not always there in the numbers. But yeah, okay. I know. Yeah, he might have raw power, but we don't see the It's not reflected in the number.
Yeah, he was just sort of like, I mean, he stood out kind of a sore thumb because he played in an era when all the other Pacific League second basemen were really good fielders, with maybe the exception of Daijiro Oishi of the Kintetsu Buffaloes, but Kazuyuki Shirai and Hatsuhiko Tsuji and the Oryx guy, Junichi Fukura. He was sort of like the offensive player at second base who was probably the worst fielder of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's kind of a defense first kind of let's bunt him over kind of guy, which is almost like, he's trying to make up for he's make up as a manager for the career he had as a player.
Yeah.
Now I'll show you. I do know about this defense first and one run strategy stuff. I'm going to do that. Couldn't do it as a player, but I'm going to do it as a manager.
There you go.
Maybe he's paying his dues now that he wasn't able to do when he was a player. I don't know.
Yeah. So we've obviously already seamlessly transitioned into talking about the Pacific League, but we do want to thank Brian again for mm-hmm. taking the time and hopefully talk to him again, especially
much appreciated.
To the play. But as Brian mentioned, you know, you win a couple games, you're in second place, you lose a couple in a row, you're in fourth place. All these games have so much meaning and so much importance. And again, I do want to compliment the organizational DNA of the SoftBank Hawks. It looks like they're on the way to clinching this thing. But the other teams, including, and you know, the thing that Brian also said when I talked about the Fighters, I'm like, you know, if you look at these new managers, and particularly the two who are losing, have losing records, and that's Big Boss and Tatsunami, and the image of what they bring to the field and to the work, to the park every day.
Mm-hmm.
At least Big Boss is the players love him. He's having fun. He's trying to be innovative. You might call it dumb, and it might be crazy. It probably is a little bit of both, but and smart at the same time. I don't know. It's a combination of everything. It's just a hodgepodge. You know, you never know what you're going to get, but at least it's exciting and it keeps everybody on their toes. Although I did hear one of the radio color commentators really fussing about Big Boss trying to bunt with a player who I think was Go Matsumoto, who is leading the league in hitting. And he's saying, why is he having this guy bunt and wasting his, you know, talents? And he was having a fit on the radio, but you know, not every decision is well-liked, not every decision is accepted, but he's the boss. He's the big boss, and he gets to make those calls. And I was just thinking the other day, he obviously they have already talked about him signing. I have not seen the news that he's going to sign it or has signed it, but they're talking about bringing him back for next year. Obviously, I think the Dragons as well are going to bring back Tatsunami. It's only 1 year, but, you know, the dark gray clouds over the Dragons, and the way that I complained earlier in the season, I said, it's not that they're losing games. It's that Tatsunami as a player was such a smart hitter and such a battler at the plate, and his team is not reflecting that. And that was what was more upsetting. And even in the past, whatever 3 weeks that I've watched the Dragons since coming back from my vacation, I see them swinging at pitches that are not even competitive at times, and the pitch selection and the things that they're swinging at and make me frustrated. Whether they get a hit or not is beside the point. Why can they not have any plate discipline like their manager? And so that's what the frustration is for me, not necessarily the wins and losses, because those things, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of talent that he's working with, and I understand that, but you know, I would like to see more of that kind of thing. So I'm looking at the teams and I'm thinking, you know, Big Boss, at least they're last place. I think those teams, I think the Dragons actually have more wins than the Fighters. But if you think about things, the Dragons have 61 wins and the Fighters only have 56. And Big Boss is, people love him, the fans love him, the players love him. And with Tatsunami, I think it's the opposite. I'm not sure. I know the fans hate him. I'm not sure what the media thinks about him. And I don't know what the team thinks about him, but it certainly hasn't been pretty. So, you know, having
interesting,
Shinjo do what he has done, the way he has done it, is certainly piqued the interest of the fans. And that's part of being the manager as well.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that you know, Tatsunami was indeed a really smart player and like just weaned all the percentages out, you know, kind of as a hitter, Alex Ramirez type, and that, you know, in this situation, the highest percentage thing I can do is, you know, they're going to try to do this, so I'm going to try to do that. It was always, everything was always a chess game.
Very cerebral, yeah, hitter.
Yeah, yes. And Shinjo's like, chess? What's chess? This is baseball. And he is there are players on the Fighters who are very much, I mean, Chusei Manami is almost a Shinjo clone.
Mm-hmm.
He's fast. He's athletic. He doesn't understand, you know, he really, if you handed him a test and said, one of these is the Swahili language and the other is the strike zone, tell us which is which.
Hashtag high heat.
And he might not be able to tell you, but he's fun. And the Fighters are very much like Shinjo. They hit a lot of home runs. They hit a fair amount of home runs, more than he was good for. They don't play that exceptional gold glove defense like he did, but they also don't know the strike zone. Generally, they strike out a ton. They swing and miss a ton. They pretty much don't walk. And if it weren't for Kensuke Kondo, they might not have any walks at all. And, you know, then they would be the ideal Shinjo team. But the thing is, you were absolutely right. The guys love him. The fans love him. The Fighters are exactly like him as a player. He was not a productive winning player, but everybody loved him. Tatsunami was a winning player and everybody loved him. And his team isn't, and everybody hates him.
And you know, it's not that I hate him.
Let's put it this way: everybody is disappointed with the fact that the team's playing poorly, in a way, playing poorly in an uninteresting fashion.
Yeah, and like I said, his personality. You know, your team is supposed to take on your personality, and that team has not. And I expect changes with the personnel in the roster in the offseason, so we'll see how that goes. But getting back to the Pacific League, which we're supposed to be talking about, the Eagles look like they're fading out here, this whole thing. And it just seems that they're inconsistent offense, and we expected them to be more consistent on the mound, and that just hasn't not been the case. You talked earlier about Masahiro Tanaka. His numbers have not been good. Takayuki Kishi has been injured in and out of the rotation. When he's out there, he's fairly good, just not too deep in games sometimes. And Takahiro Norimoto had his issues with injury, and it just hasn't been his old self. But who could be their old self? You know, with his body makeup and his height and pitching max effort as he did for such a long time, it might be the end of the road for him in terms of being the kind of pitcher that he was before, and he'll have to make some more adjustments. So they just, you know, again, the offense hasn't been there consistently, so they seem to be fading out. So, but conversely, the Buffaloes starting to play really good baseball, starting to look like the team that's kind of dangerous. And again, mixing it up as they go along down the stretch here. And I do have concerns about them in having to get through two rounds of the playoffs before going to the Japan Series and having to play SoftBank in Fukuoka. I think that's a problem. But I couldn't explain it now, right? Talking about only to say that they have not been consistent on the offensive side, especially from the right side of the plate. And, you know, other than Yoshida from the left side of the plate, and in particular, and I'm not blaming him, but just, you know, you just cannot put up back-to-back seasons like he did before. But Yutaro Sugimoto has just not been there
all season long, like he was all year.
Yeah.
But they've had some other guys step up, but it's not been as consistent. But, you know, I'm very happy generally with the they looked like they were dead on arrival pretty much in June, and they just sort of crept back into the pennant race. Of course, that was a lot of that was Yamamoto recognizing, oh, it's the second half, it's time to start winning a bunch of games.
Yeah,
and I joke about that, but and Yoshida and sort of the team playing along. I mean, Yuma Tongu carried that team for about a week. They've had these stretches, and they've had these big performances from a lot of little guys there. So I think they've hung with the Hawks, and I don't see a big issue with them. I think they could easily. Of course, their pennant hopes are pretty. I think they've got three games left, and I think their pennant hopes are essentially that the Hawks have to lose half theirs.
Yeah, it's pretty much over. You know, my scenario of having the last pitch of the season decide the three positions, playoff positions, that's pretty much over. But yeah, I agree with you, and I do have my concerns when they get into series, even if it's a short series, getting through that first one, and then having not much front end starting pitching left to go into the next series and playing on the road. I don't see that coming out as a positive for them, but they certainly have some offense at times, and they're playing well recently, and that makes it look like they have a chance in terms of that. But we've got to move on to the Central League and make a two-seam transition here. And I tell you this, the Hanshin Hiroshima game on Wednesday was pretty awesome. This fight for, because we're just waiting for the Swallows to just kind of wake up out of this little malaise that they're in and seal the deal here. I don't think they're in that much jeopardy of the Bay Stars coming back to tie or anything, but those two teams, the Bay Stars and Swallows, played tonight, and the Bay Stars beat them up pretty good. Bunch of home runs. As of Friday here at the end of the night, in terms of the games, the Bay Stars are five games back with about nine to play for them and fewer than that to play for Yakult. And so I don't see them overcoming. The Swallows just have to seal the deal here. So looks like DeNA has a really good shot at being in second. The Giants won. They beat the Dragons. They have the Dragons two more times, and then Hanshin and Hiroshima just trying to scrounge and get up there in the third place and try to beat the Giants out of third place. But you know, things are starting to see the colors on this CLCS banner for that first round, and it looks like it's going to be the Giants and the Bay Stars. But it really has been a fun race to see these teams and see how close they have been the whole season. Jumbled in that 2, 3, 4, 5 spot. Even the Dragons weren't that far out. And it has just really been a fun season in the Central League for me.
Mm. No, I think you're right. I think that the fight for third place has been intriguing. I pretty much, the Bay Stars and Swallows entered Friday's game, you know, entered a three-game series at Jingu. And the Swallows have had a six-game lead going in, and so, you know, the Bay Stars sweep, the Swallows will only have a three-game lead. But it's a tough sled. The Bay Stars pretty much have to sweep, although they sort of, they're probably, you know, it's like, as the fans say, save some of those runs to tonight. Yeah. Because it was, what a weird game. I thought it was so funny because it was played in a pouring rain pretty much from start to finish. And I think they actually, you know, they called a couple of delays, but I think it was more to keep fans in the outfield seats from getting hit in the head by baseballs coming off of DeNA bats. because it was getting dangerous out there, you know. They had to
play. It was raining baseballs.
It was pretty much
raining home runs. Yeah.
And at the end, I thought it's like I thought that game should have been. You know, it looked like it should have been called before the fifth inning. It was just pouring so hard, and the base pit, the sliding pits were sliding areas around each base were getting kind of flooded out, and it looked pretty bad. But it seemed like they were going to let this game either go to nine innings or until Munetaka Murakami hit a home run. Yeah. And then once he hit a home run, the Swallows lose. Okay, we're good. We're out of here. But yeah, it didn't, so they didn't.
Yeah, and the Bay Stars, they had a big series with the Giants, and they split that. They lost the first game, but they came back on Thursday and won, and really tight ball game. It seemed like a playoff game to me. And the Giants, you know, they looked down and out 2 weeks ago or so, but they are, you know, working their way back into, I guess, what you would call good playoff standing, in that I think they could win that first series, but especially if it's Yokohama, they don't have to travel very far, and it'll be very competitive in my opinion. So that looks fun. But yeah, Hiroshima again, just not enough. I guess consistency offensively, getting the runs on the board, and then on the days they look like the one of those teams that would just struggle. Like they would not be able to play defense and prevent runs when they scored, and conversely, whenever they played defense and pitched well, they couldn't score runs. So, and of course, it's not completely over. It's just really hard for them to, I think, overcome the other teams right now. And then the Giants getting to play the Dragons is a blessing, I guess, for them. Although the Dragons are not, they're not an easy out. They're not an easy victory. And like I was talking with Brian, neither are the Fighters. So these last place teams are not just rolling over and giving games away, and they're bringing guys out there who need to prove themselves. So everybody's focused, and these games are exactly the way I think MPB envisioned them when they instituted the playoff system for both leagues. It took a while but for the Central League to come around, but when the Pacific League instituted it way back in the early 2000s, and the Central League came around, was it 2005, I believe it was?
2006.
2006. Okay, I'm off a year. But yeah, I love it. I love what it does for, like I said in the interview, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, games between a fourth place team and even a third place team in September would just be playing out the string, and it's much different now. So
Yeah, there's lots to play for. It's fun. And I remember them thinking, wow, this is going to ruin baseball.
No,
every time the Pacific League does something, the Central League, they used to actually have a soapbox, and they put it, you know, they kept it in the Central League office, and they waited, and then a little alarm went off, and they'd call in the reporters and say, look at the stupid stuff the Central League is doing, and Tsuneo Watanabe, the owner of the Yomiuri Giants, would get drunk one night, and the reporters always used to follow him around. He's saying, what a bunch of morons. They don't know nothing about baseball. And this was pretty much the thing. And then as soon as it worked, they'd rebrand it and call it their idea. And we've seen this dozens of times. And you know, and of course now it's the case that they're thinking, well, the Central League's beginning to think, what do we have to innovate to make us as good as the Pacific League? It's like, it's so funny. I mean, it's just, it is quite amazing. And there was actually a little bit of wisdom once, because when the Pacific League owners complained that the Central League had rigged the game, and they'd rigged the system to suit the Yomiuri's business model, so that was, none of the other teams could profit from baseball, because it was, you know, everything they liked. And they said, well, there's no guarantee. Watanabe said, there's no guarantee we're going to be number one forever. And I think he probably, I don't think he actually thought that, but he was probably true.
He's just reading from a script.
Yeah. He was reading from a script, but it was prophetic, even though, you know, it is true that if you just spend all your time cashing in your chips, you don't tend to build a better business. And that's kind of what the Giants were doing for a few years, and a lot of the Central League teams. So
All right. So yeah, we'll watch as the again, there would be some gaps in between games now, a couple of days in some cases, a few days in other cases. So stay with the schedule, keep watching the schedule, and we'll watch how that goes. Let's make a four-seam transition. And you have some talk about pitch counts and batters. And I think I asked you about it during the week if you had some more information, and you said you did, and you did some research. And what did you discover?
Well, I just ran a bunch of I've been working on my pitches, evaluating pitches, individual pitchers' pitches in their arsenal for a few weeks now, and I thought, okay, well, I'll match up the batters and see what they do, because you know you can talk about the pitches, but really the thing I found out, you know, we talked about a month ago when you asked about ground ball fly balls, and I said the Yakult Swallows were really weird because most of their pitchers were fly ball pitchers at Jingu and ground ball pitchers on the road,
mm-hmm.
which would go counter to common sense, because if there's any ballpark in Japan you'd like to have the guys kill worms, it's at Jingu.
Right.
And then what I realized was basically whether a guy is a ground, the overall results are largely affected by what the batters are trying to do, less than what the pitcher is trying to do. Because there's very little, what I saw with the Swallows when I looked is what happens when they go on the road and look at the pitchers, and the pitchers who stay ahead of the count, the pitchers who dictate the count the most, and probably the guy, the Swallows pitcher who dictates the count the most, is ahead in the count the most, is Cy Snead. And he's pretty mm-hmm. much the same. It doesn't really matter. He's a fly ball pitcher all the way, and he doesn't change. It's like when he goes on when they're at Nagoya Dome, he's still a fly ball pitcher. It doesn't matter. Wherever he is, he's a fly ball pitcher because he's always ahead in the count so much. And mm-hmm. so I think it's really much more interesting to, I mean, individual pitchers are pitches are what, you know, some people have built their careers on, a number of people in baseball built professional careers around analyzing and shaping and describing and so on. But the hitters are really the people who make the big difference. So I was interested in, you know, what Michael Westbay said 6 weeks ago or so about, you know, the guys who face the most pitches per plate appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that same list. I know a couple of the names that he mentioned, Kaito Kozono as one of the guys who faces the fewest pitches, the three fewest pitches per plate appearance in NPB. Taisei Makihara, I probably wouldn't have guessed, but Kaito Kozono is there, like Michael had him, and Akito Takabe of the Lotte Marines is also there. Those are the three guys who are probably hacking the most. If they see mm-hmm. they're probably, if it's in the strike zone, they pretty much are going after it.
Okay.
And then the guys who see the most pitches per plate appearance is number one, no surprise, Kensuke Kondo, the guy who keeps the fighters from allows the fighters to actually draw a walk this year.
Hmm.
As a team, Takeyoshi Noma.
Yeah, you say no surprise, and it kind of is a surprise to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he's the guy who fouls off the pitches and takes pitches. He's ultra selective. He doesn't want to put that thing in play unless he can put a charge into it. Takeyoshi Noma is a guy I really don't know a lot about. He's having a phenomenal season though, so more power to him.
Yeah, he's
average. Kondo is 4.46 pitches per plate appearance, and for contrast, Makiharu is the lowest, is 3.23. It's not a huge difference. Number right. three. Oh well,
we are yeah we are talking baseball. Not
we big, are talking big, baseball. Big
difference. Yeah.
Haruki Nishikawa. No. Again, no surprise. He's this guy. He's up there doing what he's doing. He might not be able to explain it, but he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And number four, I was going to only include the top three, but Munetaka Murakami is fourth with 4.33 pitches per plate appearance, and he's tied with Ryoma Nishikawa of the Carp, which is also not a surprise. Okay, mm-hmm. now the one that got me the most interested was how often do the most extreme players look when they're swinging at first pitch strikes. Of course, a first pitch strike doesn't have to be in the strike zone. It can be, you know, if you hit a ball that bounces in the dirt and you put it in play, it's counted as a strike. So we count everything. If it's in play, if it's fouled off, it's taken for a strike, or it's swung at or taken for a strike, that's a first pitch strike. Okay. How often, who offers at first pitch strikes the most in Japan? And this is by what I would call a huge margin. At 86% of the time, number two is 73%. And after that, it's like 72, 72, 72 is Yuki Inagita. So if you throw him something he likes, or kind of likes, or thinks he might like in his next, in the afterlife, he's going after it.
I would not have guessed him. I would not have either. Yeah, that it was Yusuke Oyama. I think I mentioned him of the Tigers before, because it seems like he goes after a lot of first pitch, especially if it's a strike. But you know, you can see a lot of guys freeze on those first pitches, especially if they're big looping breaking pitches or curveballs or other breaking pitches that they just kind of they'll let them go. They'll take a strike, except for the Dragons guys.
And Kaito Kozono, who sees very few pitches, he's up there. He's number three. Now, the people that offer at first pitch strikes the least, the guy who offers the very least is, again, Takeyoshi Noma. No surprise. And one guy who he's 13% of the time. And number two is 20. So the two extremes are really extreme. My guess is you could probably throw a first pitch curveball to Noma, and he probably would say, "Cut out that nonsense. You know, I'm not swinging at that. So I'm looking for a fastball. Throw me a fastball, and I'll go for it. Maybe fastball down the middle. Otherwise, forget about it." But number two is really no surprise. Noma was a surprise. Akira Nakamura, who's always been one of my favorite players, I love watching. Well, actually, I despair of watching pitchers trying to get him to chase on the first pitch.
Yeah,
he's like going, like, were you born yesterday? It's like, don't you know who I am? He's just looking at that pitch and he's going like, who is this guy? What's his thing? Anyway, so, and Kento Itohara is 207. So that's, Takeyoshi Noma's 13% and Noma's about 20%. Then we get everybody at 20%. Itohara is third. I really don't have a
of the hunching
image.
Of the hunching. Let me say the team name of the hunching divers.
Yep. They're a captain. Yes. Sure. And now the last one was another interesting one is because there's a huge difference between whether you're ahead in the count or behind in the count.
Right.
And 1-0, I think hitters who pass through 1-0 counts, all their batting results end up in like a 750 on OPS. And batters who go through batters who go through 1-0 counts have about a 750 OPS in those plate appearances. And all the batters in Japan who go through an 0-1 count have about a 500 OPS. So it's pretty big. Okay, now, so who gets ahead in the count the most? Often, and kind of not a surprise, Munetaka Murakami, and again, not crazy extreme like Yuki Inagita's going after first pitches, but 532. Yoshihiro Maro, again, the guy who pretty much draws 100 walks a year. Again, not a surprise. Another guy and he's much like Nakamura. He's a guy who's not chasing that first pitch if he doesn't think he can put it in seats.
Mm-hmm.
Yusuke Oyama.
Of the Hanshin Tigers, yeah.
Of the Hanshin Tigers, 521. That was kind of a little surprise to me, but okay, move on. And now the guys who are behind the count 0-1 most often, which is kind of interesting because he's on this list. He's in the guys he's number two on the guys who get the most pitches per plate appearance.
Mm.
And that's weird because here's a guy who's behind in the count. He's going 0-1 38% of the time. And that's, excuse me, actually he's going 1-0 38% of the time. I take that back. So it's actually, he's behind in the count. I only have one percentage. I don't have one for each of them. So he's behind in the count, 62% of the time, even though he is second most in pitches per plate appearances. So that is really weird.
You think it's weird? I think it makes sense because he's willing to take a strike, you know, and he can foul pitches off, or he can, you know, he's just unlike the Dragons, like I said, he's willing to take a strike and not swing at pitches out of the zone as much. So it makes sense to me, but
okay.
Yeah.
So
I can understand. Yeah.
Yeah. But, okay. So he's number one, and number two is Ito Takeda of the Lions, which is
a newcomer to the list.
Yeah.
And all the other guys we've seen on here.
Yeah. No Lions on the list yet. So glad to welcome to the club. And Ryoma Nishikawa, who's the other guy who's the most pitched. So this is the thing. This is the carp thing. They're extremes. And actually, another guy who sees the most pitches per plate appearance is Shogo Sakakura, the carp.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole thing going on there. And then they've got Kaito Kozono, who's kind of the black sheep of the carp. It's like, just let me hit. Don't make me walk.
The black sheep walk. Of the carp.
I'm driving the ball. I'm not walking. I'm a driver, not a walker.
Well, he came into his professional career, them talking about how great an athlete he was, but that he couldn't hit. And the only thing he's done consistently, because remember, they took him out of games early on because of his defense. He really has hit a lot more than anybody expected. And maybe this is why, is because he's willing to work with pitches in the strike zone. Take pitches, foul pitches off. You know, he's adept at doing it. He's such a great athlete. So anyway.
Yeah. So we haven't looked at things like, you know, who's the best two strike hitter, but I can tell you things, and it always makes me chuckle when they say, he's, you know, here's this guy and he's leading the league in runner hit batting average with runners in scoring position. He's a clutch hitter. Well, I can pretty much guarantee you that if it's a 250 hitter and he's hitting 350 with runners in scoring position this year, he'd probably be in 150 next year, because it's just the number of trials is so small. Pretty much the guys who are good, you know, have high batting averages with runners in scoring positions are the guys who have high batting averages, period. They pretty much are stay the same over a period of time. It's kind of a 1 year fluctuation. So, but I always love that when the announcers trot out this year's stats and go, look at this guy. He's a proven clutch hitter. And if I were dead, I'd be rolling over in my grave.
Well, you're rolling over anyway. So
I am.
You don't have to be dead.
That's true. That's right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for those numbers. That's fascinating stuff. That's good. And this is people, you know, I know late in the year when your teams kind of fall out of the race and baseball's not interesting anymore, we don't get as many questions, but we would love to have your questions. So anyone who has one, please send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast with the #HighHeat, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. So you will be on vacation. You will be coming back on recording day Sunday next week, we hope. I will plan to do the show.
Yeah, hopefully if I'm still in Hawaii, hopefully I will have internet. I might not. I might be in the Fleabag Hotel.
Oh, well, I was thinking about the weather when you come back as well, since it's typhoon season. So,
okay.
Yeah, but So if you don't make it, I'll plan to do a solo show or something. I'll find somebody who's willing to stand by.
John Gibson's solo shot to the opposite.
I don't want
to
do solo shows. But anyway, thank you very much for listening. One of us or both of us will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark, wherever that is.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.